just so not so interesting for the devotee. It's very technical. And probably a little boring. But one thing we need to understand is that even though Maharaj Parikshit has only 7 days, yet Sukadeva Goswami describes the universal form to him, even though Maharaj Parikshit doesn't require it, because in a way universal form is more impersonal, is very indirect to the Lord. Whereas Maharaj Parikshit had seen directly the Lord, so he was on a personal platform. But yet Sukadeva Goswami is describing it not for the sake of Maharaj Parikshit, but for the sake of the unintelligent class of the people in this Kali Yuga. And the same goes in Bhagavad Gita also. We find in the 11th chapter the description of the universal form, where Arjuna requests Krishna to display that universal form. And if we read that, Arjuna is not really pleased at the end of it, you know. He said, yes, I am glad in the beginning that you have shown me, but then at the end he says, that's enough, I don't want any more. Because the pure devotee doesn't want to see the universal form. He always meditates on the pure Satchinananda Vigraha of the Lord. But still we find it in the Bhagavad Gita also. So it is important for us to understand what the universal form is, what it is, what is the purpose of it, basically behind it. And some more points on the universal form. So what I have done in this class, I mean, please forgive me because I have not been attending the few classes, so I don't know whether this point has been already dealt with, but the way I have tried to put up in this class is the concept of universal form, and then the purpose behind this, and then one very important point for us to understand whether that is the universal form, is it a spiritual, material, actual form or not. And then the creation, which is described in this verse. Of course, I won't be sitting here shamelessly for 3 hours, you know, torturing you, because today the time is a restriction. So we'll try and see cover how much we could. But if some of these points has already been dealt with, then I can just skip it. So devotees can probably let me know if this has been already dealt with. The concept behind the universal form. Why it has been described. So, okay, I'll start on with this one. So as I said, that this is important, even though it is not really for Arjuna or for Parikshit Maharaj, but it is basically for us, or for the common unintelligent, or more so for the materialistic people, who are very engrossed in day-to-day life with matter. So, and this is also entitled as the first step in God realization. Now as we read on, in fact this universal form in Srimad Bhagavatam is not just described here, it is described at 3 different places at least. And then in various portions of Srimad Bhagavatam there is a touch upon the universal form again and again. So it's this chapter, then again we'll find in the same second canto something about 5th, 6th chapters again going more in depth of the universal form. And then again it comes up in the 3rd canto when it describes the cosmic manifestation. So again there also there is a reference to the universal form. So it is important for us to understand. And at this point of time, though Sukadeva Goswami is telling the first step of God realization, starting from meditating on the universal form, because it's easy for a person who cannot conceive the idea of a transcendental spiritual body. That is the first thing. But then, as we go into the 2nd and the 3rd chapters, we'll find that Sukadeva Goswami is completely focusing from the universal form. So first chapter he says you meditate on the universal form, but then on the 2nd chapter he says to sway away from the universal form and then meditate on the super soul, which is Vishnu or Krishna. And then in the 3rd chapter he says again you elevate from there and then meditate on the service to Vishnu. So that's a gradual elevation that Sukadeva Goswami is trying to explain in the first 3 chapters of the 2nd canto. So at this point, we need to understand why is he describing the universal form, or what is it behind this universal form. So of course, he starts with the second canto by stressing on the point of human life, right? That this human life is so rare, and it must be utilized in the proper way, so that after this life, this becomes the last death. And so therefore he tells Parikshit Maharaj that you should, at the time of death, you should be bold enough to face death, which in other words means you should be at a stage of complete fearlessness, no fear of death. And that's what Parikshit Maharaj displays at the end, when the Tataksha comes and says, I'm ready for it, I don't fear whatever it comes. So that is the basic starting point. That we need to first point is understand that yes, this is a human form we have got, and which is so important and so rare. So therefore we must utilize this form, you know, in the perfection or in God realization. And then he says how to begin with it. So that's where the universal form comes into picture. And the other aspect also of this universal form is described in Bhagavad Gita even before the 11th chapter. Like Krishna says in the 8th chapter that the way he appears in this world, it is in actually 8.4. The best of the embodied being, the physical nature which is constantly changing, is called Adibhuta, the material manifestation. And the universal form of the Lord, which includes all the demigods, like those of the sun and moon, is called Adideva. And I, the Supreme Lord, represent the super soul in the heart of every embodied being, is called the Adi Yagna. So it's three different manifestation that he is saying. One is the material manifestation, and then there is the Adi Deva, which is basically the universal form, and then the super soul. So in this way, the Supreme Lord appears in two forms, the universal form and the all-pervading super soul. So how these two are basically connected, that is important to see. So in a way, as we are reading on this universal form, we see that, you know, the different parts or the different body of this universal form is various material aspects. So it is basically that the creation of this universal form is like something like the cosmic embryology, you know, how a child is born from the embryo and then he grows. So it's something like that. The concept of this whole universal form is from the cosmic embryology. And we'll go into that detail if we have time to see how the creation is developed. So this universal form is basically like, the concept is that the looking at the whole universe as a body of the Supreme Lord. It is, Prabhupada describes in some purport as well in Bhagavatam, that it is not an actual form, it is an imagination. Why it's an imagination? Or because the cosmic manifestation appears and disappears. So with the cosmic manifestation, the universal form appears and then goes away. So it's in other words, it's a temporary form. Now, this is in the modern philosophy, something that is very related to the universal form that is described here is what the modern philosopher called as pantheism. I don't know how many of you have heard this, but that is pantheistic idea or pantheism, where it is said that this nature is divine. So what is the meaning of nature is divine? Means that the nature is connected to the Supreme. The nature is not God, but it is divinely, it is godly. So that is the idea behind this, that God is everywhere, and this cosmos or this cosmic manifestation is a living being. And it is the supreme living being. So there is a soul of this universe, therefore, which is then the supreme. So, in other words, therefore, it is hence said that because this is like an organism, like our body is an organism, and within our body there is also a lot of other organisms. But this as a whole structure, it works in a unified manner. So similarly, if we expand that extrapolate this idea, this whole cosmic manifestation is also like a unified organism which works in tandem. And because it's an organism, therefore there has to be a super soul, there has to be some living entity to drive it, and that living entity is the supreme. Now the general mass may not say that, oh, that is Krishna or that is Vishnu. It's the Supreme. That's the idea. So therefore, in other words, this whole organism becomes the body of that Supreme. That is a universal form. Now, and therefore, this is very important in today's world, actually, to understand this and drive this message. Because, as I said, people, it's very difficult for, if you go on the street and then say, oh, the Supreme Lord is a transcendental body and, you know, is a spiritual body, and it's completely out of their conception for a person who is so much in materialistic life, dealing with matters. So for them, this idea is a basic starting step, that to see everything in connection with that Supreme. Because this whole cosmic manifestation is the body of the Supreme. So, and in today's world, like, we are seeing so much of, you know, global warming and then the other concept that is Gaia, which in the Greek word means the Mother Earth. So all that, if you see around, you know, it is basically focusing on the nature as divine. So to save Gaia, and then, you know, all these things are all going around the world now today. It is something where that is, the concept is basically something that is, you know, foundation is on the universal form in a way. So for a person who is dealing with, you know, he can easily conceive what is matter and what, like, you know, we see around and said, yes, this is a pillar, this is this, so he can conceive that. Now, if the idea has been put forward that, yes, this is matter, but it is in a way related to the Supreme, and therefore its body is a part and parcel of that universal form of that Supreme, so then their consciousness changes. So then it is said that when one starts meditating on this Supreme, then, or meditating on, you know, on this connectivity or the connection of this material world with the Supreme, then slowly he comes to the platform of goodness, from passion and ignorance. So, and then he, and as I said, that Sukadeva Goswami, then in the next chapter goes on to meditation of the super soul. So that's how you elevate from focusing with this consciousness that everything around in this world is related to the Supreme, and therefore there is a divine being who is driving this cosmic manifestation. So slowly we come to a platform of meditating on that Supreme, which is the super soul. And then slowly as we elevate, then we come to the point of engaging in his service. It may not happen in one lifetime, but at least that's the starting point of God realization. So that is in essence. So what I am saying here is that as a whole, to understand that this complete universe is working by a single living entity, and therefore when Arjuna requests Krishna, he sees everything at one point, right? In the description in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he sees so many things at one point, at Krishna displays everything, the mountains, the suns and the moons, and everything that you see in this material manifestation at one single point. So that is what it means. And so therefore this is an external manifestation of the super soul. It's not right, therefore, as a devotee, it is not a real, very elevated realization of the Lord, as I said. So therefore, devotee don't really take much interest, in a way. Or in fact, as a pure devotee, they don't even worship the universal form. It is said in Bhagavatam and some other places. But as I said, this is still important for us to understand. So the living and the non-living entities, therefore, as a part of this universal form, is not separated, or is not away from the Supreme. And everything is in relation to Krishna. So we know that Krishna has different energies, which is classified into three main, the spiritual, which is Satchidananda, and Anand, and then the external, which is made of the nine elements, which is given in Bhagavad Gita, that is earth, water, air, fire, ether, and then the mind, and then the intelligence, and the false ego. So that's the external energy, and then of course the tatakshya shakti. So this cosmic manifestation or the universal form is actually a manifestation of the external potency. It has nothing to do with the internal potency, and therefore it is not an actual or a factual form of the Supreme. It's a temporary, it's an imaginary form, because the external potency is not eternal in a way. It manifests and unmanifests. But at the same time, what is important for us to understand is that this external potency is as much as Krishna's energy as the internal potency. So, the connection is eternal because it is coming from Krishna. But the form is not. The form is not factual. The connection is factual. So, therefore, when a person therefore comes to this realization of this connectivity, which means, as we say that in general, Prabhupada said that once if the people want to know God, or how to see God, then they need to come to the point of engagement in God's service. Right? In our Krishna consciousness, we say that the highest form of worship is to engage in His service. Now, when we say this engagement in His service or devotional service, it also means, in other words, the connection, to acknowledge that connectivity with the Supreme. Right? So, and if we don't acknowledge this connection with the Supreme, then whatever engagement we do, it is classified as sense gratification. So this is the point to drive here, basically, what Sukadeva Goswami is telling, is that for the unintelligent class, because in the day-to-day life, they are engaging so many things for their own sense gratification. But when they understand that there is a connection with the Supreme, then they see the same matters or the same sense objects that they were enjoying for themselves as connection to the Supreme, as divine. And so their consciousness or their thinking is elevated to a platform of goodness, that no, this belongs to the Lord. This is part and parcel of that Supreme. And so therefore it is for His enjoyment and not for my enjoyment. So, therefore, or rather, one more point on this aspect is the root cause of this material existence is, as Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, there is two points, the dvesh and iccha. Now, the hate and desire. So the reason why this material manifestation is basically created is to get rid of these two things. The original desire, which is, why can't I be God? And the original hate, that is why Krishna is God. So that is the basic purpose of why Krishna creates His material manifestation. Because the moment we get the desire to enjoy away from Krishna, or basically in other words to become Krishna, He actually says, alright, you go to this material manifestation and you can try to enjoy. Until we come to the point of realization that it is utter frustration. Because that is not our constitutional position. So we have to therefore overcome this thinking of why can't I be God, or in other words, why can't I be the enjoyer, the controller, the proprietor, and Krishna is the God. So these two things, therefore we have to overcome this, we have to restore our relation with Krishna and acknowledge this fact full-heartedly, that yes, Krishna, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you are my master, and I am your servant eternally, and I am happy about it. So this is the fact where Sukadeva Goswami is actually driving from the point of universal form. So for a person to come to this conclusion is very difficult. It's very difficult. But slowly, by understanding that this matter and anything and everything that is around in this world, is this cosmic manifestation, is connected to the Supreme, is driven by the Supreme, and therefore it is a body. In one sense, it's a body of that Supreme. So I must therefore engage everything in His service. So once he then starts developing this faith, his godlessness gets driven away and becomes more God-minded, more focused on that Supreme then. And then slowly he gets elevated to then focus on the Supreme, and then he goes, of course, Krishna as the Chaitanya Guru, he helps every individual entity. So he will then come into the contact of devotees and so on and so forth. So that is the beginning of point. Now, the other point is, as I said, the purpose. Now, Prabhupada also says in one of the purport, actually, as we read on later on, is, okay, before that, as I said, the universal form is not actual. So just a few points on that. So it is said in another verse in Srimad Bhagavatam that the universal form of the Lord is imaginary, an artificial form in which the entire universe, consisting of the small and the great, and the individuals and the various groups, are imagined to be the parts of Lord's great body. This form, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says actually, this is, I think, he describes it to Brahma. This form I have described unto you from the material angle of vision is not accepted by pure devotees of the Lord who know Him well. So in other words, the people who worship the universal form is not the real form, because the pure devotee knows what the real form of the Supreme is. But what is more important for us to understand is, as I said, one thing is the universal form is a manifestation of the external energy, not the internal energy. Then the Supreme Lord assumes the form of the Super Soul and thus enters the material world. And that is said in the scripture that the material universe is one of the Lord's form. Now there is an example which is given that the truth is, just as the silver glitter on a seashell is not really silver, so the so-called universal form is not really the form of the Supreme Lord. So the Lord's universal form is only an imagination. And in this way, the impersonalist idea that the universe is merely a transformation of the Supreme is not true. So this is another point which we need to understand, because as we read in Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna is requesting Krishna to show him the universal form, Krishna says that you need divine vision, right? And he gives that divine vision, and then Arjuna is able to see the universal form. But as we are reading here, because this point is in one of the scriptures that I was reading, so I came across this really wonderful point, because some people then argue that universal form is actually the original form, and then everything else that comes, Krishna and all other forms, is from the universal form. That is their argument. And the point that they put forward is, or the justification that they put forward is because Arjuna required the divine vision to see the universal form. Whereas, because as we read on in 7th chapter, finally Arjuna requests Krishna that please show me your transcendental two-handed form, right? Which he was able to see with his normal vision, right? Which he was not able to see. But for us, when we read, we say that we need divine vision to see that transcendental form. And the universal form is an external manifestation, and we can see easily. We don't need that divine vision. So that is the point of argument that some people put forward and say that, oh, the universal form, the Virat Roop, is the ultimate. Whereas in Srimad Bhagavatam, and as we have just read, it is completely refuted that is an actual form or that is an ultimate form. And everything comes from that form. No. The origin is Krishna, which is transcendental, and this comes from there. So, actually this, I think, I don't remember this is from where, but this is, I think it's probably from one of the Satsandarbhas. This point comes up basically, where Jiva Goswami is explaining this point, a further clarification of this point. So, this is, I'll just read through a little bit of that. With his ordinary vision, Arjuna was able to see Lord Krishna, the human-like Supreme person. And Arjuna required divine eyes, as it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, so to see the universal form. Although, with his own natural vision, he was perfectly able to see Lord Krishna, the human-like Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, it is more difficult to see the human-like Krishna form, Lord Krishna, than it is to see the universal form of the Lord. The form of Lord Krishna cannot be seen merely with the divine eyes, given to see the universal form. So, the point there, what Jiva Goswami puts forth is, that this is confirmed in the quote, in the following quote of Bhagavad Gita 11.52, where Lord Krishna again reveals his original human-like form to Arjuna and says, by explaining how the human-like form of Lord Krishna is so rare and difficult to see, right? Krishna then says that when he shows the Sachidanand two-handed form, Krishna actually tells that this is the most rare to see, and it is so difficult for even the sages to see that form. So by explaining how the human-like form of Lord Krishna is so rare and difficult to see, the Lord explains that his original form as Lord Krishna is superior to the universal form. And this is confirmed in 11.51, where Krishna is saying this part. So when Arjuna just saw Krishna in his original form, he said, seeing this human-like form so very beautiful, my mind is now pacified and I am now restored to my original nature. So in other words, to also understand that Arjuna also is not a material aspect. He is also coming from his intimate associate of the Lord. So he is also an internal potency. So therefore he is saying that now I am able to restore to my original nature. So he is able to see that divine form because he himself is an eternal, coming from a eternal potency. So we may also note in this connection there are a few more verses that then Jiva Goswami puts forth from Bhagavatam actually to clarify this particular point. We may also note in this connection that these verses immediately follow the Lord's revelation of his original human-like form and are distinctly apart from the revelation of the universal form. For this reason, one may interpret these verses as description of the universal form. You know, so that's the point that some of the impersonalists or the atheists who believe in the Virat Roop, they put forth. That if you read in the 11th chapter, the first form that the Lord shows is the universal form. And then from that form, he shows the four-handed form. And then he shows the two-handed form. So, biologically, universal form is the original form. That's what their argument is. So the supremacy of the form of the Lord Krishna among all the forms of the personality of Godhead is also described in the following verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, so there he gives some references to some of the verses in Bhagavatam. This one is in 11th canto, 11.65. When Lord Brahma and all the demigods and sages arrived, they became astonished to see the wonderfully beautiful form of Lord Krishna, and they constantly gazed upon him with unsatiated eyes. Eager to see Lord Krishna, Narad Muni continually remained in the city of Dwarka. And then there is another verse, which is where I think Narad Muni is telling the fortune of Pandavas. My dear Maharaj Yudhishthir, all of you Pandavas are extremely fortunate, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead lives in your palace just like a human form of the Lord. So, and there are some more verses, but for us to understand and be clear on this point is that the universal form is not the origin, it's not the ultimate. It is just an imaginary form which is coming from the external potency of the Lord. And the original form is the two-handed form of the Lord. So that is one of the points. And yes, and then there is another point to that as well. The entire material world is a body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the concept of the universal form. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the soul, and the material world is his body. Thus, as the material body undergoes changes while the soul within remains unchanged, so the various parts of the material world undergo changes while the soul of the world, the Supreme Personality of God, remains unchanged. So in this way it is proved that the material world is not unreal. So this is also what we, you know, in Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna sees this form, he is seeing so many things are changing, you know, people are being killed, Like here we see in this particular reference to this particular verse where it is stated that the jaws of the teeth of this universal form is the jaws of death. So that's what Arjuna sees in Bhagavad Gita at that point of time, where he sees all the sons of Dhritarashtra, then Drona, Bhishma, Karna, everybody is just being rushed into the gaping mouth, which is emanating fire and being crushed in those teeth. Very ugly looking sight. So that's where it is, that the material world is constantly changing. As in our body also. This body is constantly changing, but the soul within is not, because that is eternal. The soul within is not. So here the same concept goes on the universal form. Super soul or the supreme is eternal, but though the material manifestation, the cosmic manifestation is constantly changing. In fact, at every night it actually annihilates of Brahma. And then every day it again appears. So that's a few points on the form of universal form. And the purpose, as I just hint upon, is again, Prabhupada says in a very elaborate manner, in one of the purports again, that he says that the materialist, philosophers, and specifically the scientists, they are dealing with, you know, with all the wonderful things around in this material. They are trying to study this material universe, right? The cosmology and then the atoms and this and that. So their consciousness is so much dealing with matter. And in one place I read that the simple definition of materialist is, I believe what I see. So therefore, for such a person, if you tell them that, oh, that is a supreme Lord who is transcendental, which we cannot see, and this, you know, which is in the spiritual world, it's beyond their conception. They cannot agree to that philosophy. So for them, Prabhupada says here, therefore, that they are too engrossed with atomic energy, the gigantic situation of the universal form, and therefore they offer respect more seriously to the external phenomenon. You know, because they think, oh, how wonderful this cosmology works. They get some kind of appreciation. Oh yes, that means there is somebody, some supreme. Of course, if they believe in Darwin's monkey philosophy, then probably not. But at one point of time, they do come to some conclusion that yes, there is some power, some supreme power behind this whole cosmology, which is working so wonderfully. So with that consciousness, then, you know, they then come to that point of acknowledging something supreme. That there is some living entity or some kind of a power which is driving this whole cosmology so perfectly. So therefore for such people, they offer respect more seriously to this external phenomenon or feature of the material manifestation than to the principle of spiritual existence. So the transcendental form of the Lord is beyond the jurisdiction of such materialistic activities, and therefore it is very difficult to conceive that the Lord can be simultaneously localized and all-pervasive. Because the materialistic philosopher and the scientist think of everything in terms of their own experience. Seeing is believing. So if you tell even that, oh, that the Lord actually appears in three different aspects, you know, Brahman, then the Paramatma and then Bhagavan. So that is again still beyond their conception, you know. So that to say that, oh, that the Lord is all pervasive, He is present within every atom in this material cosmic manifestation also, still that is far-fetched idea for them. So therefore, because they are unable to accept the personal feature of the Supreme Lord, the Lord is kind enough to demonstrate this Virat Roop. And this Virat Roop or this material form or the manifestation is so gigantic in a way that everything, whatever a person can think of, is included in that. Is included in that. So therefore, none of the materialistic thoughtful men can go beyond this conception of the gigantic form of the universal. The minds of the materialistic men are flickering and constantly changing from one aspect to another. Therefore, one is advised to think of the Lord by thinking of any part of this gigantic body. And by one intelligence only, one can think of him in any manifestation of the material world. The forest, the hill, the ocean, sun, moon, so many things. Anything you take it, and then if you think that, oh, this is a part of that supreme, then, you know, their consciousness slowly starts changing. So each and every item of the material manifestation entails the part of the body of this universal form. And thus the flickering mind can be fixed in the Lord only and nothing else. So that's the purpose, that is what, this is the first step of realization. This process of concentrating on the different bodily parts of the Lord will gradually diminish the demoniac challenge of godlessness. Because when one is godless, or in other words atheist, then he is very puffed up. Because then he thinks that everything is for my enjoyment, and when he starts enjoying things, obviously there is a sense of happiness, or a sense of not happiness, I would say, a sense of pleasure. And from that sense of pleasure, the mind starts thinking that, oh, these objects are meant for my enjoyment, therefore they belong to me. So that pride, or that puffed up mentality, is basically because they don't acknowledge the Supreme. They don't acknowledge the supremacy. But when they think in this manner, then slowly their godlessness gets transformed into godliness. And then they can elevate, come gradually to then the devotional service of the Lord. So everything being part and parcel of the complete whole, which is again the same verse, the first verse of Ishopanishad, that this complete is, this whole manifestation is a complete whole, which is emanating from a complete. So this, everything being a part and parcel of the complete whole, the neophyte student will gradually realize the hymns of Ishopanishad, which state that the Supreme Lord is everywhere, and thus he will learn the art of not committing an offense to the body of the Lord. So which means, otherwise means that the same material things which he was utilizing for his own sense gratification, then he will have some consciousness that no, this is, you know, meant for the Supreme, or I should not exploit, which is happening in today's world. So much of exploitation of oil and gas, and so much of nobody is bothered about, you know, about the universe, and therefore there's so much of things going around for global warming, and, you know, because it's just an exploitation, and they don't understand that there is a Supreme behind all this. So they're not ready to acknowledge this, and therefore out of their own prideness, puffedness, they just want to exploit this nature. So this sense of God-mindedness will then diminish one's pride in challenging the existence of God. And thus, one can then start slowly showing respect to everything around. So that is the basic purpose of starting from the universal form. Why Sukadeva Goswami is bringing this point? Because not all people can come straight to the point of devotional service, as you know, it is so. Even devotional service, as you said, you know, Brahmana Brahmite Kaun. So even after wandering so many of lifetimes, one rare soul may come to this point of devotional service, but not everybody. That's why we have only a handful of devotees here, not the whole of Singapore here. Okay. So those persons who are unable to pin their faith on the personal feature of the Absolute are given a chance to associate with this Virat Roop, the cosmic impersonal feature of the Lord. And then the other point to understand is, the cosmic impersonal feature of the Lord is a feature of His unlimited potency. So again, we come back to that point of, that though it is impersonal feature of the Lord, or imaginary, it is still coming from His external potency, which is a very much coming from the Lord, very much part and parcel of the Lord. So, since the potent and the potency are identical, the Krishna and Krishna's energy, the everything that is manifesting from this for the spiritual world as well as the material form, everything has, leave it, it's okay, everything has, or everything has been, you can say that is summarizes in three things: Krishna, Krishna's energy, and the relationship between them. That's it. So when we say Hare Krishna, anything and everything that one person can think about is everything already in that two words. Because Krishna is Krishna and Hare is this, is his energy. So everything gets comprised in that two words basically. So that's all, everything is made up of. So here the non-devotee class of, so the point that we are coming here is that since the potent and the potencies are identical, that is, even the conception of his impersonal cosmic feature helps the conditioned soul to associate with the Lord indirectly. Because then he starts acknowledging the cosmic manifestation as one of the energies of the Lord. So from that acknowledgement, he therefore indirectly starts associating with the Supreme. And thus gradually rise to the stage of personal contact. So that is the first three chapters, is therefore that is a gradual conception that Sukadeva Goswami is saying. So first the universal form, then he comes to the super soul, and then he comes to the devotional service. So with this understanding of the point of potent and potency, we then come to this last aspect of it, that the Supreme Lord is one and his expansions are various. Therefore, the super soul, and therefore he is therefore the super soul of everything. When a man sees anything, he must know that his seeing is secondary, because he cannot see without the Lord seeing it. So anything that we see, like here in the universal form, it says that the sun and the moon are the eyes of the Lord. So before the Lord seeing it, we cannot see it. Before the Lord tasting anything, we cannot taste it. So we are, it's a secondary. Which also means that whatever we see or do, the super soul of all acts is seeing and doing first. So this theory is related, therefore comes to the point of Achintya Bheda Veda Tattva. Which means that the individual soul and the super soul, let me explain this further. The Virat Rupa or the gigantic form of the Supreme Lord includes everything materially manifested, and therefore the Virat Rupa is the super soul of all living and non-living entities. The Virat Rupa is also the manifestation of Vishnu. And therefore eventually the person therefore sees the ultimate truth, that is Lord Krishna, in everything. So this Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, that oneness and also different at the same time. So here, when one acknowledges the material manifestation as coming from the Lord, therefore in one way it is oneness with the Lord. But at the same time, it is not same as the Lord. So this also therefore helps one to understand this philosophy as well, the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, which is again the highest truth what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifests or explains to us. So if we take, I don't know, this might be my speculation, but if we take just three examples from Bhagavatam, of taking from this aspect of a universal form, where a person is gradually elevated from the basic steps of realization to the highest realization. Now when we go to Vrindavan, we see Govardhan. Now of course Govardhan is non-different than Krishna, because it is coming from his internal potency. But when we see the other mountains and the trees all around, we don't think that way. Right? We see that, okay, that's a mountain or that's it. So here in this universal form, if we are conscious that, oh, that is also coming from Krishna, therefore it is a part and parcel of the Lord. So that is one of the points to understand. Similarly, when Prahlad Maharaj sees the pillar, now if somebody was to ask, oh, can you see the Lord in that pillar? Now Prahlad Maharaj also is a pure devotee. So he can therefore see the Lord everywhere. So from this gradual elevation of realizing that everything in this universe is part and parcel of the Lord, we actually therefore can come to the consciousness of what a pure devotee can see. And as what Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that a pure devotee is one who sees the Lord everywhere, in everything, and everything in him. So we therefore can come gradually to that highest realization. So therefore when Prahlad Maharaj sees that pillar and Hiranyakashipu asks him, He says, yes, the Lord is there. So that faith, why? Because he was actually seeing it. It's not just a concept. It's not just a concept. Today, yes, we can say, yes, I can see the Lord in that pillar. But it's just a concept because, okay, we are understanding that it comes from the Lord. So therefore, it's a part and parcel of the Lord. But as a pure devotee, he can actually see the Lord everywhere, within everything. So this is a highest realization, coming from the same basic foundation of universal form. And then the one more point that Prabhupada says in this purport of the alluring, illusory material energy is a smile. Now, of course, we could have I could have gone in more detail of this aspect as well, because this is something that is related to what 99.99% of this world is engaged in, the enjoying the alluring, illusory energy. And the highest form, as it is stated in the Bhagavatam, the highest material allurement is wealth and women, or in other words, sex and opulence, Hiranyakashipu. So, when one starts realizing this connectivity of things with the Supreme, then this allurement also gets diminished in a way, because the same things that a person was using for his own sense gratification, as I said, you know, they start consciously, the mentality changes, and then they start consciously seeing the same things as part of the Lord, as part and parcel of the Lord. So therefore, of course, Mahaprabhu says of the highest form of no dhanam, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. So then, that is again a highest realization, coming from the same foundation. Of seeing things in connectivity with the Supreme, as part and parcel of the Supreme. And therefore, you will then consciously start or stop exploiting things for your own sense gratification. Okay, the time, still we have 10 minutes. So maybe I'll just touch upon, briefly upon this creation of the universal form. I know today's class is not so spicy. This is something very dry subject. Therefore, even in seven days, people asked me, I read the verse and I said, oh my God, what am I going to speak on this? I mean, you know, it's such a difficult thing to speak. And as I said, devotees don't relish this. They would rather relish hearing the pastimes of the Lord hundreds and hundreds of times than hearing this even once. But this is important. It is described in Bhagavatam, so everything that is described in Bhagavatam is important for a devotee. So, this is coming from, again, as I said, the cosmic manifestation. I'll just run through very briefly because the creation of this whole cosmic is again a very lengthy topic, again a very dry subject. But because in this particular purport and the verse that we are reading today, there is some touch upon the creation, that how it is created just by the glance of the Supreme. Upon us. So, most of us know how the expansion of the Lord works, right? So from Krishna, the first expansion, Balramji, and then from Balramji, the first Chaturvyuha, that is Vasudev, Sankarshan and Pradyumna and Anirudh, and then from the first Chaturvyuha Sankarshan, that is the second Chaturvyuha expansion, which is again Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and Anirudh. And this Sankarshan is known as Mahasankarshan, from which Mahavishnu appears. So as we see, this Mahavishnu is actually the plenary expansion of the expansion of the expansion of the original form. So Mahavishnu therefore then lies on the causal ocean, Karuna, therefore is known as Karuna Dakshai, the causal ocean, which appears in one corner of the spiritual world. He manifests the Mahatattva, which is the sum total of material energy. So from a very layman point of view, we can think this just like an egg, which is in an unmanifested form. So which then, after a certain period of time, it then manifests into a body. So it is into this Mahatattva that he exhales all the seed-like universes through the pores of his skin. So, from here we can understand that it's not that, oh, the huge universe is coming from the pores. it's a seed life form that comes out and then it expands. And then it manifests, basically. So these seed like universes then expand as the different material elements forms covering around them. And this covering, each of these coverings, so there are the coverings which are again made of, let me read those. It is made of water, air, fire, sky, ego, and the Mahatattva increases in thickness one after the other. Each of this layer is 10 times bigger than the previous one. And then the final outer covering is covered by Pradhan. Now Pradhan is the unmanifested form of all the sum total of living entities. So within the egg of the universal form of the Lord, Hari, whose offered body, the 14 planetary systems are the parts. So it's like a part and parcel which has everything in it, but still in unmanifest form, just like in the egg form. When Mahavishnu impregnates the living entities by his glance into this material nature, it begins to manifest its various energies. So there is, as we see in our mundane world as well, you know, the child is only born when the female and the union between the female and the male. So the male is the one who gives the semen, right? And then through which the soul enters, and the female gives the body. So here again it is the same way of creation. The pradhan or the material manifestation is one aspect which cannot just manifest the living entities by itself. By the glance of the Lord, all these living entities are impregnated in this material or energy or in this unmanifested form. And then it manifests in all the living entities. So again this comes to the point that, you know, the living entity do not come from a material form or from matter. It's the other way. So when the universe has thus developed in the womb of the material nature, then Mahavishnu expands as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who enters into each of these universes with the living entities of that particular universe and thus activates each universe by his presence. He lies down on the Anantashesh, who lies on the Garbha ocean, which is the perspiration from the Lord's body, and half fills the universe. So therefore there's half of the universe filled with water, and then the Lord, the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And then from his navel comes the lotus bird, which is the total form of the living entity's fruitive activity. Because why it is said that? Because according to your past karmas, then you will be given a specific body and a specific residence in this 14 planetary system. So therefore this whole lotus bird, you know, where after which Brahma is born, that whole stem, which is the 14 planetary systems, is actually coming from this fruitive activity. And this lotus, as it grows, dissipates the darkness of the universe. On the top of the lotus, Brahma, the first living being, appears. And then not finding his origin, Brahma looks in all the four directions and then develops four heads. Situated on the lotus, Brahma could not understand anything, and therefore he starts entering into the stem. And that takes a long time for him, but again he doesn't find anything. So he goes back and then hears the word tapa. So he starts meditating. And he meditates for 1,000 celestial years, which is a very long time. And after being pleased, the Lord manifests the Vaikuntha planets. Seeing Vaikuntha, Brahma becomes very happy and bows to the Lord. Being very pleased with Brahma, the Lord shakes his hand and reveals how to create the universe. And then to maintain the universe, again, this is another important aspect from a universal form of point of view as well. To maintain this universe, then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu expands as Shirodakshaya Vishnu. So just like in this mundane world or in this our own body, to maintain this body, the presence of the soul is important. Once the soul is gone, body cannot no longer, you know, maintain itself. It dies off. So the same way in this whole material manifestation, to maintain it, this Garbhodakshaya Vishnu then expands himself as Shirodakshaya Vishnu, who is the all-pervading super soul, Paramatma. And then it enters into every atom, he maintains the whole universe. Okay, then, so that's the first part of it. Then, so after the incarnation of the first Purusha, Shirodakshaya Vishnu, the Mahatattva, which we just talked about, the sum total of material energy becomes manifest, then time is generated. So the first thing, time is generated, and in course of time, false ego appears and transforms into three qualities. That is goodness, passion and ignorance. Now, the manifestation of false ego and ignorance, from the darkness of false ego, five elements are generated. The sky is manifested first, which is the most subtle form and which is related with sound. Then, because the sky is then transformed into air and is generated with another subtle quality of touch, then air is transformed into fire, which again gets another subtle quality of shape or form. Then fire is transformed into water, which gets another subtle quality of taste. And then water is transformed into earth, which gets another subtle quality of smell. So these are the first part of the creation. Time and then false ego, and then false ego with engagement in different modes, different elements are created. So that is the five subtle elements and the five gross elements. Sky, air, fire, water and earth, and the corresponding subtle elements that gets created is sound, touch, form, taste and smell. The construction of the whole material universe is prominently made of three elements, therefore, earth, water and fire. But the living force is produced by sky, air and water. So water is a common element in both the gross and the subtle forms of the material creation. Right, in our body also. Probably, I think, 3/4, I don't know scientifically, but probably 3/4 of the part is water. Or the major part of is water, basically. So water is the most prominent element and therefore the principal element of all the five. Then the manifestation of false ego in passion. So from false ego in the mode of passion, all the sense organs are generated. So two kinds of senses, the knowledge acquiring senses and the working senses. So then these sense organs are generated, that is ears, skin, eyes, tongue, nose, and the working senses are hands, legs, voice, anus and genitals. The intelligence and the living energy are also generated. Then the false ego in goodness, from the false ego in the mode of goodness, the mind is generated and becomes manifested. The 10 demigods controlling bodily movements are also manifested. Okay. Then, after this, okay, now I won't go into detail of after this one, I'll just touch, because this is the five, so we have the five gross elements, the five subtle elements, the five sense organs and the five working organs, and then false ego, mind, and then all the deities of different controlling aspects start getting created. So up till this point, this is already created from Mahavishnu, and then Brahma starts creating. So that's the later part of it. When then Brahma starts creating is again another, all the, as we hear, you know, the first, basically when Brahma starts creating, it is for the creation of progeny. So he gets the Kumaras first, and then, you know, Daksha and all the other forms that we then hear. So that's for the progeny purpose. So this is a very long part of this part of creation, but in essence this is a form of how the basic creation takes place in the cosmic manifestation. So just the important part is that it is created by the glance of the Mahavishnu. Without that glance, this cosmic manifestation cannot be created. It is just an inert matter. So I'm sorry for going into so elaborate and so much of technicalities. Thank you for your tolerance. I'll end here basically. Yeah, 10:30. So I'm sure there won't be any questions. I mean I don't know what to say about this, but I'm very sorry of giving such a class actually. In fact, I wasn't even well prepared for this, frankly speaking. But I just tried my best. Thank you very much. All the best, Srila Prabhupada.